It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to our Information Please party. We play a simple game. You furnish the questions, and our experts try to answer them. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now, right up a Lucky Strike, as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, whose new book, Reading I've Liked, is appearing on most of the bestseller lists, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is entirely unprepared and unrehearsed. And tonight, our four fact fanciers consist of John Kieran, sports authority, and author of The American Sporting Scene, his newest book, and also, bagosh, an actor for it to appear on Fred Allen's show this Wednesday evening. Then, Franklin P. Adams, famous light verse writer and originator of The Conning Tower. Deans Taylor, music critic, who it seems also has a new book out this week, The Treasury of Gilbert and Sullivan. And that great and antic zany here tonight, minus mustache and cigar. Oh, he's got a good cigar. The one and only Groucho Marx. Now, I note that two of you gentlemen are getting books out this week. What happened to you, Mr. Adams? No books?
I've written more books than all these boys put together.
No boasting. Mr. Marx, any books from you?
No, but I'd like to sell this suit, if you know anybody.
I think that'll be harder. Remember, now, for each question that we miss, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, we're off with a question from J.J. Mahoney of St. Louis. Can you mention three people whose nicknames describe a mood? Oh, happy or gay or jolly or anything of the sort, Mr. Adams?
Lucky Baldwin.
Lucky Baldwin. Who is Lucky Baldwin?
Well, he was a horse player, I think, and maybe a horse owner.
Sounds all right to me. It does describe the mood. Mr. Marks.
Gloomy Gus.
Gloomy Gus? Who is Gloomy Gus?
I haven't the faintest idea. Happy Hooligan's Park.
I guess they got
a comic supplement for Happy Hooligan's Park.
Yes, he's a comic strip character, and it's okay, Mr. Marx. Mr. Taylor.
Groucho Marx.
Groucho Marx. Yeah. You know, Mr. Taylor, that almost sounds like a put-up job. Mr. Kieran.
It does, doesn't it?
Sad Sam Jones, the old Yankee pitcher, who wasn't sad at all.
Why'd they call him that, then?
It was all a mistake.
Well, it gives us four of them. Any other ideas, Mr. Marks?
Weary Willie.
Weary Willie, yes. You stick to the comic strips, don't you? Don't know any real people at all?
No, I do most of my reading there.
And there was Gloomy Gil Dobie, Calamity Jane, Happy Chandler, the senator from Kentucky, and many others, perhaps.
Lucky Baldwin.
Yes, Lucky. That's right, Mr. Marks.
Sure, that's pretty good.
That's getting two out of one.
Filthy Luca.
You got anybody? Comic strip character, Mr. Marks. Well, that was very easy, just to give you some confidence. Now, how about this one? This comes from Gene Edward Sothin of Flushing, New York. Can you sing a few lines? Sing, gentlemen, sing a few lines from a song about the following captain. Now, the first is a captain who never used bad language or abuse. Mr. Adams.
Captain of the Pinafore.
Yes, we are asked to sing. You may recite.
And a right good captain, too.
That's reciting.
He's very, very good. Oh, you mean
That's very good. Go
other
ahead.
Thing?
Yes. How about the lines that show us that he never used bad language or abuse?
Bad language or abuse, I never use, whatever the emergency.
Nice work.
Though bother it I may,
occasionally say,
I never use a big D.
Well, that washes up the captain who never
uses
that.
Certainly washes up Gilbert himself.
All right. Now, how about a captain who was...
10 years or something.
I got another captain on deck here. Who? A captain who was a moral man. A captain who was a moral man. Mr. Marks?
Animal crackers. Hooray for Captain Spaulding.
Ah, can you give us any of it, Mr. Marks?
Captain is a moral man. Hooray for Captain Spaulding, the African explorer. Did someone call me Schnorra? Hooray, hooray, hooray. He went into the jungle where all the monkeys throw nuts. If I stay here, I'll go nuts. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you recall that for us.
Sure.
No, that's enough.
Captain, any manhood, you don't want
Captain
more
Horatio Hornblower was a moral man. It's a two.
Yes, he was.
He had no music.
No, had no music. At any rate, no
music
that Mr. Marks could give us. Now, how about a captain who wasn't cut out for the Army? A captain who wasn't cut out for the Army. Adams?
Jinx.
Jinx is right.
Of the Horse Marine.
Line from it. I joined my corps when 21. Remember how it goes? Of course, I thought it capital fun when the enemy came and off I'd run, for I wasn't cut out for the Army.
Take it away, Fatima.
That's the best I can do. All right, that gives us three captains out of three and sends us on to Madeline Burton of New York City, who sends this question in. Mark, I bet you'll stay out of this one. A murder has
take
just...
half your bet, Cliff.
Well, let's see. A murder, gentlemen, has just been committed on the Shakespearean stage. In what play by Shakespeare does the character use these words right after the murder is committed? I'll give you the words. Now, the first set of words is, get you out of three on this, villainy, villainy, villainy. Tell me in what play those words are uttered. You don't have to give me the character. How about a guess? Mr. Marks is throwing the question to Mr. Curran, who has just dropped it. Mr. Curran, want a guess at it?
Othello.
What did you say?
Othello.
Say it again.
Othello.
That's right. Very good.
Othello is correct. Delicious flavor.
Othello is correct. And it's Amelia, the wife of Iago, who utters the phrase.
There you have
it. Villain. Very good, Mr. Adams. How about this one? Oh, horror, horror, horror. In what play is that said?
Sounds like Macbeth.
Say, that's very good, Miss Kieran. Macbeth is right. Now, who says the words, would you imagine?
Why, the lord who goes in to wake the sleeping king.
Well, it's after the murder, yes, after the murder of Duncan. It's Macduff.
Macduff
says the word. Well, now we have the...
Lay on Macduff.
That's the one.
Lay on... I used to say, lay off Macduff.
Lay off McBride.
Yeah. Let me get on with this question, gentlemen, because I have one more of them. Here's the phrase. Howl, 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 howl. That's four howls. Who says that? Where, Mr. Kier?
I think that probably is in King Lear.
It is indeed.
By William Dean Howell.
yeah, right after the murder of whom?
Cordelia.
Of Cordelia, that's quite right. Thank you very much. That gives us three out of three. How about this one from M.C. Clendenning of Detroit? I think we ought to get all on this. Very easy question. Who is referred to as the man of a thousand holds? The man of a thousand holds. Mr. Kieran?
Oh, Hackenschmidt. Or Gotch.
Of which?
Well, both, if you ask me.
Well, I'm not certain. Mr. Marks?
Earl Caddock.
Gotch is right. You think it's Earl Caddock?
Earl Caddock.
How long did
he have?
He
had one hold. He had a scissors hold.
Well, we think of
Gotch. Gotch had a toe hold.
A toe hold, yes. But he also had 999 other holds, apparently. How about the man of a thousand faces? Who's that? Man of a thousand faces, Mr. Marks.
Well, some Jack and Vaudeville. I don't know his name.
Oh, you don't know? That's a very well-known name, Mr. Taylor.
Lon Chaney.
Lon Chaney, yes. And how about the man of a thousand wives? Who would that be? Man of a thousand wives, Mr. Adams.
Solomon.
Yes.
King.
Synonym for wisdom.
Yes. King, he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, if you want to be exact about it. There must have been a lot of good numbers in the thousand. And how about this one from Mrs. Elizabeth Green of Arcadia, California? This is very hard one. Get three out of four on it. In what play or book does a lady thief marry her intended victim? Get it? Mr. Taylor.
The Last of Mrs. Cheney.
Very good, Mr. Taylor. That's right.
Ina Clare and Roland Young.
Very good memory. Thank you. And now, in what play or book does the victim claim...
Frederick Lonsdale.
Now, we have everything.
Yes.
I think we have all the information we can find.
Master on. Theater.
In what play or
no
book...
No matinee.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll get to this yet. In what play or book does the victim claim the swag was a gift? Mr. Curran.
Lame as Rob.
Lame as Rob, yes. What he stolen and from whom?
He's stolen the silver service from the bishop.
Yes. Who was the stolen the silver service?
Jean Valjean.
Jean Valjean. I suppose you're going to tell me what theater that played, Mr. Taylor.
No, but the service wasn't very good, Ed.
Carnegie Life Theater.
How about this one? In what player book does a doctor become a thief in order to study the effects of crime? This is a play. Doctor becomes a thief in order to study the... Mr. Taylor.
The Amazing Dr. Clitterhouse?
Yes, that's exactly right. The Amazing Dr. Clitterhouse. Very good memory you have for these things,
yeah,
Mr. Taylor.
Sit right on those laurels and keep quiet.
And how about one in which a house is built to recover the stolen article? Mr. Morris.
Animal Cracker.
Mr. Taylor, Mr. Adams, thank you very much. You remember the story...
You took the words right out of my script.
Do you remember the story at all, Mr. Morris? The story of Animal Cracker?
Not if I can avoid it, no.
Well, it's a very, very good story.
I'd like to hear it sometime.
You ought to use it sometime. How about this one from D.R. Roberts of Laurelton, Long Island? Are you going to hear some entrance music played? Three different pieces of entrance music. Identify a well-known vaudeville act from the entrance music. Is that clear? Let's have the first. Get you out of the way. Mr. Adams?
The act was Lottie Gilson.
Not according to my information.
I don't care. It was Lottie Gilson.
Well, I'm glad you're conducting this argument.
The song is Elsie from Chelsea, and it's probably supposed to have introduced Elsie Janet.
And didn't it?
I don't know, but Lottie Gilson sang the song.
All right. That may be true. My card says Elsie Janet, but I'm sure that your memory goes back further than mine and is more accurate anyway. Call it correct. How about the next one? Mr. Mark.
Paul Morton.
Gee whiz, we can't seem to get any of the answers on my card. The Paul Morton, not the Avon Comedy Four.
Could be.
Which do you like?
I like the Paul Morton.
I like the Paul Morton.
All right, I'll take the Paul Morton. I'm the next and last.
I'll take three Mortons if you don't want to get the Paul.
Francis White. Francis White used to come in singing about Mississippi. Mississippi is right. That's very good, gentlemen.
That was before it was a river.
So far, it's been a remarkably brilliant evening. Lucky Strike has paid out nothing and no such to the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now Mr. Cross has something to say in favor of a sterling American virtue.
That's common sense, ladies and gentlemen. And applied to the subject of smoking, your own common sense will tell you that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. The better the tobacco, the better the smoke. Now, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. We bring you proof of this in reports from tobacco markets all over the South. Reports that show we consistently pay the price to get the finer, milder leaf. For example, so far this season, according to latest reports, at Madison, North Carolina, the American Tobacco Company has paid 45% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 45% above the average market price for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we buy goes into Lucky's. Mr. Fadiman, have I demonstrated a good common sense reason for smokers to try Lucky Strike?
You've supplied both precept and proof, Mr. Cross, and in just 54 seconds. And now how about this one from Walter G. Davis of Portland, Maine? Duchesses, you know, have sort of been in the news lately. So here's a question about duchesses. What duchess advocated child beating? Mr. Curran.
Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, Alice.
Speak
duchess.
Sharply to your little boy and beat him when he sneezes.
Thank you, gentlemen. Right.
Now,
what duchess smiled too much? What duchess smiled too much? Mr. Moore.
The Duchess of Windsor.
Possibly. Well, she has a very nice smile, Mr. Moss.
Too much, sir.
The last duchess that was painted on the wall.
Yes, in Browning. In Browning's famous poem, that's right. And how about a duchess who lived in a dream world? Mr. Taylor?
Mary, Duchess of Towers in Peter Revitson.
That's right. Mr. Kieran, what were you going to say?
Same thing.
Same thing. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3, which we were required to get. And
how about getting back to vaudeville?
Well, we may. Stick around, Mr. Moss. We may get back.
I'd like to get him to sue you.
You ought to be able to get into the next one. You know something about Gilbert and Sullivan, Mr. Marks, don't you? Don't tell us. Now, the board, this is a question coming from Mr. Howard C. Jensen of Boston. The board is asked by Mr. Jensen to identify these arias from Gilbert and Sullivan and show they know the works by singing the opening choruses. Is that clear? Let's have the first. We're going to get all on this if we can. All right, now you have to sing the opening chorus, gentlemen, together if possible.
Oh, we sail the ocean blue, our saucy ships of beauty. We're sober men and true, and attentive to our duty.
And the balls
are
free over the
right
foot. Not
enough for Mark. Very good, gentlemen. Now how about the next one? Now, what's the opening chorus, Taylor?
Now, if you want to know who we are...
All right.
I want to get a...
If you
want
to know who we are gentlemen of Japan.
On many a faith in
I like the way in which you have I'd like the free shanty that you have.
After that, when Gilbert isn't around now. You don't say anything, we won't.
All right, we'll keep it quiet. And how about the next one and the last? Does that puzzle you, gentlemen?
We are something little fairies skipping hither.
You got it. Approximately right. Mr. Taylor, can you...
Well, something little fairies...
Tripping hither, tripping thither.
I don't know why they're tripping, but...
Nobody knows why or whither, and so forth. We must dance and we must sing round about our fairy ring. Is that right, Mr. Taylor?
Perfect.
You're the old Gilbert and Sullivan expert.
This will kill any possibility of a revival.
People are more stubborn than you think, Mr. Marsh.
There's going to be an awful lot of people going back to Victor Herbert.
How about this one from Barbara Hess of Poughkeepsie, New York? I think we ought to get all on this. It's not hard. It's about famous guides. Whom did each of these people guide? Anselmo is the first. As a guide, this is from a novel. Guided... Whom?
That's a Kieran question.
That's a tough one. Mr. Marks, you give that to Mr. Kieran?
Raw Anselmo?
No, just Anselmo. He guided Robert Jordan, who is the hero of Hemingway's novel, For Whom the Bell Tolls. Well, that gives us one wrong. Now, how about Buffalo Bill? He's a famous guide. Whom did he guide, Mr. Kieran?
Well, he guided for Custer for a while, I think.
I don't know whether he guided Custer, but he certainly guided the Army.
United States Army.
He guided the... Wild West show all over the country.
Yes, that's true, too.
And Annie Oakley.
He was a guide in the Indian Wars in the late 60s and early 70s. Remember that, Mr. Marks, don't you? Good. Now, how about Virgil? Virgil?
How about Opera Guide by Norman Levy?
Haven't got that on the card. Mr.
Virgil guided Dante through the Inferno.
Yes, that's right. And Tonto guided whom? Tonto, T-O-N-T-O. Mean anything to you, gentlemen?
Tonto Marks?
No, no.
Tonto probably guided her uncle.
Tonto,
I'm not sure of the name, but is that the mouse that guided the elephant in Dumby or whatever the name?
Dumbo? No, I think Timothy is. Isn't that is Timothy the name of the mouse? No, Tonto is the guide for the Lone Ranger, gentlemen. Tonto is an Indian guide for the Lone Ranger. I guess we lose $25 and send out a set of the Britannica, courtesy of Lucky Strike.
Well, we don't listen to radio.
Apparently not.
I only listen to information, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mark.
Next week.
How about this one from Lois Davey of Port Washington, New York? In what field of activity might each of these statements be made? We get 2 out of 3. Now, the first is, did you scratch? Mr. Adams?
That might be pocket billiards.
Yes, and what would it mean?
Coarsely known as pool.
Yes, you can say pool, Mr. Adam.
Say pool, Frank.
That means if the cue ball enters a pocket.
A scratch?
A scratch or failure to hit the object ball.
Yes, or failure to hit the apple ball.
But you can scratch without playing pool.
Yes, but it's a technical term, Mr. Moore. For example, if the phrase "I adjust" is used, what game are you playing, Sure.
That is the English translation of the French chess term "j'adoube."
And what does that mean?
I am not intending to move this piece. I just want to fix it on its square, because otherwise, if you touch a piece without saying anything, you must move that piece.
That's exactly right, Mr. Kier. What's the French phrase?
"J'adoube."
"J'adoube." Mm-hmm. And that means adjust, does it? Yes. Thank you. And how about the...
That's on a regular $1.50 dinner.
Well, Well, we have 2 out of 3.
How about home tonight, minding my own business?
Oh, you're doing very well.
How about sachet?
Sachet. S-A-S-H-A-Y.
What?
Sachet? Sachet. S-A-S-H-A-Y. Mr. Chairman?
That's dancing. Old-fashioned square dance.
Square dance. That's right. What does it mean? What do you do with it?
You sway back and forward. You come up to somebody and then come back again.
Well, Mr. Taylor,
you mean... the line and come up and meet and then back away from me.
That's right. That is...
That is what you're married.
Pardon?
You're married to a swayback. Or is that a biscuit that you have for breakfast?
You confuse yourself, Mr. Marsh. Here's one from C.C.D. Briggs in New York City. I think we're going to get over.
C.C.D. Briggs?
No. C.C.D. C.C.D. Briggs. Name a novel written by the author of each of these plays. The Circle is the first play. Name a novel written by the author, Mr. Cure. Mr. Taylor.
Of Human Bondage.
Yes. The author being?
Somerset Maugham.
Somerset Maugham. How about Little Accident? Little Accident. Name a novel written by the author of Little Accident. Mr. Adams?
That's Floyd Dell.
It is indeed. What novel did you name by Floyd Dell? Mr.
Mooncalf.
Mooncalf. Very good. What were you going to say, Mr. Maugham?
Mooncalf.
Good again. A play known as Redemption. Name a novel written by the author, Mr. Marsh.
Tolstoy.
Who told you that? That's right.
You're bound to absorb some knowledge, didn't you, Adam?
Yeah, Tolstoy. And what novel did Tolstoy write? What novel? Give me
Redemption.
One. No, Redemption is the play. This is where you came in, Mr. Marsh. Mr. Taylor?
War and Peace.
War and Peace. That's one novel, Mr. Marsh. War and Peace. Not two. And...
Anna Karenina.
Anna Karenina. And there are 2 or 3 others. Now, how about this one from Florence E. Ruff of Middletown, Pennsylvania? I'm going to read you some vows, B-O-W-S, vows. Tell me who makes these vows, where they're from. I'm going to live through this, and when it's over, I'm never going to be hungry again. Who says that? I'm going to live through this, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, wait a minute. That just means that I'm thinking.
How do we know?
I can't give you very much more time.
Would that be a Dickens character?
No, it is
not.
No,
it's a modern...
It is modern. It's Charlotte O'Hara's famous vow in Gone with the Wind. I'm going to live through this, and when it's over, I'm never going to be hungry again. Well, that's one wrong. I have to get the next two right. Here's another. Wherever there's a fight so hungry people can eat, I'll be there. Wherever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there. Miss Marks.
Clifford O'Death.
No, though it might be characteristic of him. It's a vow made by a fictional character. Mr. Taylor, are you thinking again?
I'm still thinking.
Mr. Gary?
It's in a play. It's in a modern play. And,
It's a tough one. I imagine many of us are familiar with it from the movie, Oliver the Grapes of Wrath. It's Tom Joad's vow to his mother in a very affecting scene in The Grapes of Wrath. That gives us 2 wrong vows out of 2. And here's the third. We shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight on the landing grounds, in the fields, in the streets, in the hills. We shall never surrender. Mr. Taylor.
Mr. Churchill.
Yes. Speech following...
retreat from Dunkirk.
Yes. Winston Churchill following the evacuation of Dunkirk. That loses us $25 and sends us out of the Britannica to Miss Ruff, courtesy of Lucky Strike, and sends us on to the next question for Mr. George L. Booth of South Euclid, Ohio. Get 2 out of 3 if you can on this. Each of these numbers has a special meaning with regard to a special occupation. Tell me what each of the numbers means. What does 30 mean to a newspaper man? 30, Mr. Kieran.
Good night. It's a sign-off.
It's a sign-off.
The work is over.
That's right. The end of a story. Yeah. Do you know the origin of it?
Well, it's a symbol that you put at the end of your story, or the typesetters do. Maybe Frank probably would know.
Do you know on the AP wire when there's nothing more to say?
That's correct. But why should it be 30 rather than 40?
I don't know. I forgot.
We'll probably learn
more. I think it was originally a telegrapher's symbol.
Meaning the end?
Dash. Yes, I don't know what the dots and dashes would be. But...
Well, it would be interesting to find out how the number 30 was used.
I'll check up on it.
All right, Mr. Marks, we're depending on you. Now, how about this? What does 5 million RBC mean to a doctor? 5 million RBC, Mr. Marks.
I don't know, but it's awful for the patient.
Miss Kieran?
Sounds something like a blood count.
It is.
Sounds something like a bill.
No.
So many,
so many blood
corpuscles, I guess.
Yes. Miss Kieran says it's the number of red blood corpuscles in the normal blood count to one cc of blood.
It's like red sails in the sunset.
Approximately, yes. What does the number 86 mean to a hash house waiter? 86. Any idea?
What ham and egg.
Pardon?
Ham and egg.
No. Mr. Mark?
What avenue, 86?
No, just 86. Oh, you don't know that. They're a tough one. It means that there's no more of any food item on the menu. I suppose the...
Well, they can still get your hash.
Yes, I suppose so. That gives you only 2 out of 3, but apparently that's enough, gentlemen. Now, how about this one? From Mrs. Remington Corper of Staten Island. Get 2 out of 3 on this. Name the play in which all or most of the action takes place in the following places. Takes place in a train. What play? Mr. Adams.
20th Century.
Very good. Takes place in a boat. A play takes place in a boat. Mr. Marks?
Outward Bound.
Very good. Takes place in a dugout. Mr. Kieran?
What Price Glory?
What Price Glory? Is there a dugout in it? I don't think so.
Journey's End.
Takes the action, practically all of the action takes
That's
place
right.
in a dugout.
Practically.
We got 2 out of 3 on that. That's all we were required to get. Now, Mr. Cross tells us of an encounter he had with a gentleman in search of enlightenment.
Well, Mr. Fatiman, evidently some people's ideas about advertising have been a little upset by my recent comments on this program. You'll recall I pointed out that if Lucky Strike stopped all advertising, radio, magazine, and newspaper, yes, if our cigarettes came to you completely unheralded and unsung, the price you pay for a package of Lucky's would not be reduced one iota. But the other day, a gentleman I was introduced to said smilingly, Mr. Cross, I'd always thought that advertising costs money. Of course it does, I told him. However, the total cost of advertising Lucky's is such a small fraction of a cent a package that even if it were entirely eliminated, the saving per package could not be passed on to you. You see, smokers, advertising is not what you pay for when you buy Lucky's. The makers of Lucky's have always believed that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. The tobacco, not the advertising. And we pay what it costs to get the milder, better-tasting tobacco for Lucky's. For instance, 20% more than the market average at Hartsville, Tennessee last season. 34% more at Asheville, North Carolina. And so on, all over the South. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Why not make your next package Lucky's and prove for yourself that it's the tobacco that counts?
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out $50 and 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Thank you on behalf of Lucky Strike, Mr. D. Taylor, and Mr. G. Mark for attending our party tonight. Now, next week, our terrific trio, Levant, Kieran, and Adam, will have as their 4th guest... a man who has served his country as commercial attaché in Berlin, up to recently, and is the author of the well-known bestseller, You Can't Do Business with Hitler, Mr. Douglas Miller. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Reed, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
When you hear that chant, ladies and gentlemen, remember these two important facts. That at market after market, we pay the price to get the milder, better-tasting tobaccos. And that with independent experts, it is men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Yes, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. But see for yourself. Next time, ask for Lucky Strike.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.